Welcome to the Football Podcast. This is your host, Mr. Number 9.
And this is The Fool.
Good day, everybody. Now, it's been a long time since our last podcast, but we were pretty thorough in our last podcast, so I don't feel as bad about taking as long this time for this one.
Yeah.
I will feel bad about how long it's taken us to do tomorrow's one, but that's another story altogether.
Yeah, that is another story. Yeah. That's
now,
tomorrow's story.
Technically, it's officially the peak of the cricket season, so we shouldn't be talking football, but we are going to talk football because we know football never ends, and it's always football season.
Yeah, exactly.
When we last left you, the two European club finals, which is the Europa Cup final and the UEFA Champions League final, were yet to be played. It was an all-English affair in all four games. Proud day for that country in footballing history. Even the losing sides, you know, did themselves any harm.
They all played
very well.
It was two pretty good games.
Absolutely. And, okay, would change any of the grades on any of your teams? Because I think we gave Liverpool, I'm pretty sure Champions League doesn't really, if we can give them an A++, that would be it. But if I didn't give them an A+, they get an A+ now because they're, you know, European champions.
Yeah, exactly. I'm pretty sure we'd given both City and Liverpool top marks for the year because
they'd had a great year.
I'm
sure Spurs were given A's by both of us because we thought we were very impressed by the fact that they didn't take in any new recruitments and managed to make a European final and finish top four, which doesn't change. So A is very. I think if Spurs, I think I gave Chelsea a minus from memory.
Yeah,
you were a bit harsher on them. You gave them a B, but now that they've won Europa, surely you'd give them an A- at least.
I'll give them their A-. They did do it. I'm feeling a bit better about it now. I mean, I was a bit upset.
I gave them an A-. I am tempted to give them an A because European trophies are European trophies. And yeah, they got to the Champions League without winning the Europa Cup, so they didn't need that. And they got top four.
As I said, I think at the time, it was a bit funny. They got top three, they won the UEFA League, and yet they still lost the manager. Different situation than what was envisioned. He wasn't sacked, he decided to leave. But
I feel for Sarri. He was in a rock and a hard place, and I have to admire, he did really well with a really shitty situation being handed to him. I mean, it's neither him or the club's fault. They both gave it, I think, in good faith, came in trying to do something and realized that one or the other were, like, you know, the club's way had to be the way it went. And the manager realized that he wasn't going to get what he really wanted. And the club were kind of like, actually, we really want this. And, like, you know, he gave it their best. And he gave them a really good year, I think. And I think some Chelsea fans were overly critical and complained and wanted him to leave are going to feel, I don't know, going to regret it. Because it's not like you good managers like him grow on trees. I would happily take him as a Man United
manager. We appear to have gone the same route as you guys of let's grab an ex-player that, you know, ex-legend, or a current legend, ex-player that's turned legend and bring them along and get them to manage for a year or two until we can have decent coaches
again.
Because
apparently that worked well, because we did that twice, remember, not just this time. Like, we did it after Moyes left.
We've done it before as well.
And I'm sorry, if Ryan Giggs does not scream Mr. Manchester United to you, and if he can't succeed from his Mr. Manchester Unitedness, then Ole Gunnar Solskjaer can't succeed based on his Manchester Unitedness alone. But
exactly.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer does bring some tactical and managerial experience, and he does know how to lead winning teams.
Yeah,
and as he has done in Norway.
Well,
we're going to have a preview for next season, and that's a topic for another podcast.
Definitely.
So, overall, I think we're happy with our marks. We've given some people a slight increase. Let us move on to the international football. That's right. The very thought would be the red-headed stepchild of international trophies. The European nations, it was quite well received. I think everybody was reasonably happy. I mean, okay, you and I made complete sense to us how this tournament was run. A lot of people were still confused, but, you know, at the end, I think Portuguese are like, hey, we won something. Yay!
Exactly.
But, okay, first of all, Nish, love it, hate it. What would you change if you would change anything?
overall, I think I liked it quite a lot. There's not really a lot to change. I like the idea of, you know, the sort of very small leagues as such. So you get lots of good games. You know, someone's got to, some out of the top league, some good team's got to go down. And you get a new one up, so you get decent cycle around as well. I thought it was,
I think,
yeah, it was good.
Yeah, look, I personally also really liked it. I really liked it from beforehand. I was really excited about the starting, and I hoped it would pick up because I thought it would be a shot in the arm for the international game if every continent then started implementing this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it gives every team, like every continent and every international football team, this context, this ability. There's a pathway to get up to a thing, and it's like, you know, and more funding and more, you know, more, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, you know, get more fame and more,
yeah, yeah.
Growing their brand as well, yeah, for advertisers, getting money. And like, yeah, I thought it was really important for the UEFA Nations League to work, and I think it did. What I love about the format, relegation promotion, as I've mentioned, and I think every sport and every sport format would, that even no matter how good they are now, can be improved by introducing relegation promotion into it from a fan perspective. Really,
yeah,
from a team owner's perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just what the administrators need to balance out. So,
yeah, yeah.
Like, yes, before NFL fans come to tell, come in at me, don't at me, bro. Like, yeah, I'm not saying NFL absolutely should introduce the relegation promotion. I'm just saying you fans would enjoy it more if there was.
Yeah. It does give a bit more riding on it. And, yeah. You get decent matchups all the way down. Like, there's always games that are somewhat interesting or have some meaning to it, as opposed to just this game that happened that's not going to have any meaning or anything's going to happen and nobody's going to care.
Yeah, and also, like, you know, there's certain, like, the bane of American sports, where if you're having a losing season anyway, you effectively start trying to race to the bottom so that you get the best draft picks in the next year. And that's goes against everything a fan wants. You want to see your fan win. You don't want them to keep, you know, go, oh yeah, we've written off this season so we could get good draft picks. That's like, it's a big middle finger to the fans who spend money and to go to watch your games and support you. So relegation promotion gives context in that they can't just drop games and like fans will go because they're interested and it's intense. And like, I'm pretty sure every team, every fan of a football team that is, you know, every season, like, battling for relegation, somehow surviving, has a much more exciting football season to enjoy than, you know, even when I was supporting Man United at their peak when they were winning. Like, even if they were winning in the last game of the season, it was still, I'm sure, it's more exhilarating for them.
Yeah. And to say, it's otherwise, you know, with just bottom team gets first draft, you know, at some point during the season, the team writes off the season. They don't try anymore.
Yeah.
As a fan, what's the point of going along watching the game or turning the TV on or anything like that? You may as well be like, well, next season for us then, I guess. And it's not even finished season. And so where's the engagement? At least if you got a relegation battle, then say every match still means something. You're like, we need to win this. We're not going to get to the top, but, you know, a point's a point. Even, you know, in football, even the draw, you know, scratch out that scrappy 0-0 draw, 1-1 draw against the top team.
Exactly.
There's a whole extra point. That's a golden point there. It's a point someone else is not going to get. So.
Exactly. On a semi-related note, on unpopular opinion time, I think one of the reasons why Heartland and NPC Rugby have been suffering crowds-wise and, like, you know, entering the social consciousness-wise is because we've gotten rid of relegation promotion.
No, they've had it for the top two divisions the last couple of years. In fact,
yeah, but like when they got rid of it for a while is when it got, you know, when the interest was lost and it was like kicking a sport that was in trouble, like, you know, didn't need to have something, didn't need something that would be so drastically disastrous happen to it. Like,
it didn't help that they sort of did two things at once. They reduced down the promotion relegation. It was still there, but it was there was a playoff game and it was. And they've scrapped it into the two subsets. You've got the top divisions, which have two divisions, as the NPC, and then you've got the Heartland Rugby, which is the smaller unions or sub-unions, who get their own promotion relegation between two divisions as well. So you don't get a point, but
I'm happy with the two division, like Heartland and Professional divisions. Like you've got one professional division and one semi-pro division, and that completely makes sense. And fine, there shall never the twain shall meet. That makes sense to me because these guys are not they're not professional, so that's fine.
And if they're good enough, then there's pathways because generally, there's the professional teams.
Look, we live in New Zealand. If somebody complains, enough people will change things.
Yeah,
that's really what you're saying.
Yeah, but the other thing is that the other thing that sort of made the New Zealand NPC sort of go down was when New Zealand Rugby decided that the World Cup meant more and the All Blacks meant more, as the All Blacks don't play NPC, and so that cuts down on fans' engagement. They don't get to see the best team. They get to see.
That's true.
Second, well, not even second stringers, like third stringers.
But that was the thing. I completely agree with that, but the All Blacks were already playing very little NPC by the time these rules were implemented. And most of the players were the fringe or the players we thought would become up and coming All Blacks. And things like that. So that was, this. The NPC was still healthy with a low number of All Blacks.
Yeah. It was healthy, but it wasn't. Well, I wouldn't call it healthy. It was ticking along.
It was living. It was ticking along.
And then throwing in the cutting down the availability of the promotion relegation.
Yeah.
Sort of was the final bit, and then even then, less fringe players there. So I see.
Yeah.
Just to do a bit of promotion, though it's too far away from me now. Counties Manukau this year. Are doing great work at being able to try and drive back in the engagement for the Steelers. With the first game, if they get 8,000 or more fans show up, all those 8,000 get a home season pass, which I think is ridiculous.
I think should have by the Steelers. 8,000 would be an amazing crowd at
Although they could possibly get that if everybody's like, "What, we get to go to the whole season?" Sure, we'll go along for that.
Oh yeah, I would be very surprised if it didn't work.
I think they get pretty close to 8,000 people on average, because Pukekohe generally supports the Steelers quite well.
Yeah. Oh look, it would still be a great crowd, a great result for the Steelers to get an NPC, and heck. I think Auckland would be lucky to get 8,000 supporters coming to Eden Park. At the best of times. But you are absolutely right. Pukekohe and South Auckland in general do support the Steelers quite well. But this is another segue argument going into the rugby, which belongs into the rugby podcast, which I don't know when we're doing.
The non-existent rugby podcast.
The non-existent rugby and rugby league podcast, which we never do. But no, we're going back to the Nations League.
Nations League, yes.
Yeah, the Nations League. Absolutely happy with the format. Absolutely think. Absolutely love all that about it. And I think, in a way, it was good. Like, the four best teams in every group got through to the semis. There was no BS results where a team just happened to draw a few and win, and like everybody tried their best to win games. Everybody, I think, took it seriously enough, and Cristiano Ronaldo wins another international trophy, and Portugal are on back-to-back European titles. Well,
they are too,
if they qualify for Euro 2020 and manage to win it, they'll have a hat trick of Euro continental level titles.
Yeah.
Now this is a discussion me and the fool have had today, discussing the two GOAT players of our generation, really, of watching football. I can easily I can't separate the two of them, Messi and Ronaldo. Like, obviously, because Ronaldo is an ex-Man United player, I have more of affection for him.
Yeah.
But I will never say, without a doubt, questionably, that he's a superior player, or vice versa. That's not what I'm saying. They're both great players. But people have said both of them kind of underachieved internationally. People always gave Cristiano Ronaldo a bit of a free pass, going, well, your Portugal team has been kind of average in that time. So you never really, you were pretty much a one-man show. And, he pretty much you know. But then he's won two titles now with a team that's not much better than what he's had in the last 10 years before Euro 2016. Since, sure, the team he played for in 2004 in the Euro 2000, that team you can legitimately say had underachieved because they were considered to be Portugal's golden generation. I don't think anyone is considering this group of Portuguese players, with all due respect to them, like, sure, they're very young. They're not, the last 10 years of players, they're not Portugal's golden generation.
No, these ones aren't, no. As you say, the ones from 10 years back, whatever it was, that was the golden generation. That was their up-and-comers. That was the big things.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they did reasonable, but you're right, they underachieved still, based on how much props everybody was giving them, how much expectation was put on them.
Yeah.